Welcome, everybody, to the 40th edition of Three Up, Three Down. 40 episodes in, and if we can just get 40 home runs or 40 stolen bases, we'll finally be allowed into Jay-Z's 40-40 club in New York City. But we're going to talk about the opening series of the Major League Baseball 2013 season. I am joined by my baseball roundtable associates for this week. Started off with Kurt Peter.
Yes, that would be me, yeah. Based out here in Milwaukee. Go Brewers.
That is you. Unfortunately, Brewers, yeah. Only 1-2 right now.
Yes.
What are your thoughts on John Axford? Should he stay the closer still?
He's going to no matter what because Ron Renicki doesn't like bailing on him right away. But, I mean, watching him through spring and then watching him the first few games, it's kind of – he's a little slower than usual and he's leaving some fastballs up. But we've got a lot of arms, so we'll see.
Going over to Brian Boynton, Rangers fan extraordinaire. He had a nice little opening series, 2-1 against the Houston Astros.
Yeah, but we always seem to be just one out away.
How was opening night? You went to the first game of the Major League season between the Astros and the Rangers. How was that?
I'd never been to a Minute Maid Park, so that was pretty awesome. It's an awesome park. If you've never been, I highly suggest it. It would have been a lot better had the Rangers won and not gotten completely destroyed, but other than that, it was a good day.
And last and least, the way he likes it to be called, Jeremy Dorn, Dodgers fan. How are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good, man. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing swell. I'm doing much better than Matt Kemp, though, apparently.
I knew it, and I figured I might have set you up no matter what I said. But in case you didn't hear on ESPN, Sports Illustrated, LA Times, Vanity Fair, GQ, and every other publication in the world, Matt Kemp is 0-10 this season.
He is. And even worse, he's 0-25 against the San Francisco Giants. What's that
don't
do for
it.
You?
Oh, God. Good night.
Just the facts, man.
Good night, everybody.
And my name, Brian Mapes, and I was doing perfectly fine until the Braves ran into Cliff Lee tonight. But luckily, if you're going to lose, you might as well lose to a pitcher you have on three fantasy teams. So, a silver lining there. Angelo Felicia, the other member of the podcast, is on assignment. His Michigan Wolverines, I don't know if you heard this, it's not baseball, but they're in this thing called the Final Four playing Syracuse on Saturday. So he is heading down to Atlanta to go watch the Wolverines in the Final Four. And from all of us here, except for KP, who went to Wisconsin, we'll give a go blue.
I support the Big Ten through the tournament.
All right, there you go. Well, from all of us, Angelo, good luck to your Wolverines in Atlanta. I'm very jealous. He's going to hit up a Braves game, too, on Sunday. Gah! He's going to get to one before me this season. I'm not happy about it. But let's get on with the podcast. The first bit of news from this week, it was extensions galore all week, especially on Good Friday. First, the news of Justin Verlander's extension, a new 7 years tacked on for a total of $180 million that will make him the highest paid pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball. There is a vesting option for 8 years, $202 million. That vesting option kicks in if in the seventh year of the contract, Mr. Verlander finishes in the top five of American League Cy Young voting. Also, another MVP getting extension, this time with the San Francisco Giants. Reigning NL MVP Buster Posey gets an extension to 9 years, $167 million, the largest and longest contract ever given out by the Giants organization, making him the second highest paid catcher in the history of Major League Baseball behind the Twins, Joe Mauer. Guys, going to open it up right now. Which deal would you rather have? Which MVP would you rather have? Justin Verlander or Buster Posey? We'll start it off with Jeremy.
Well, you know, in watching this horrific Giants-Dodgers series over the first few days of the season, Buster Posey barely topped Matt Kemp by going 2-10. So before that, I would have said Posey. No, I'm just kidding. He's still solid, and I think that Posey is the better deal. I'm usually, in cases like this, probably going to side with the hitter anyway, just given that, you know, Verlander is going to be older. He's a pitcher. Arm injuries are rarely, you know, they do not happen rarely, I guess. You know what I'm trying to say. A lot of people get arm injuries regardless of how good or how healthy they've been their whole career, especially older age. And yeah, I mean, Posey's, what, 24, 25, he's going to be there through his prime. And I think given the market value today and the caliber of player he is, that unfortunately for me, the Giants actually got a really good bargain with him.
Brian, over to you. Who would you rather have based on these extensions, Justin Verlander or Buster Posey?
I'm actually going to have to go away from what Jeremy said. So, but like he said, based off injuries. I mean, you got a pitcher who's going to be, well, he'll be 30 at the end of this year, but he's been dominant. I mean, he's still a pitcher, only pitches every fifth day. You got Posey, who's already missed half a season because of an injury. Plus, he's a catcher. I saw him get hit on a backswing in the back of the head. It only takes one of those, then he's out for a couple weeks. He gets hit a lot more. If it was any other position other than catcher, I would side with the hitter, but I'm going to have to take Verlander on this one.
KP, over to you. What are your thoughts on Verlander versus Posey's extensions?
I have to agree with Brian. Not based on injuries, but just based on impact, I think, in a game. Yeah, he only touches the ball every 4 or 5 days, depending. But he touches the ball every time. I mean, Buster Posey, as you can see, he goes through slumps, and pitchers do too, but Verlander's, I mean, just, he's been lights out, and barring anything changing or him doing anything different, and I don't think that that's going to change. I mean, if you can hold the other you got to score runs to win a game, but if you can prevent the other team from scoring any runs, you're going to probably win a lot more games.
I just wanted to touch on what Brian said about the injury, I agree it is, you know, that's if you're going to go towards the injury argument either way, then catcher is definitely the second probably most susceptible position for something like that. But I think the Giants have made it pretty clear that Posey's future will be at first base eventually. I don't know whether that'll be sooner rather than later, but I can't imagine it'll be later with all the money they put into him just now. And, you know, as for the half season he missed, that's, you know, that's a freak thing. That's not going to happen again. More than likely that was bad timing, bad blocking of the plate, and just kind of a freak collision that snapped his leg. So I don't know if we can really count on something like that happening again. But, yes, he could get banged up, and I think that's why they'll move him over to first eventually.
Yeah, the Posey injury was a fluke thing. It's hard to see that happening again, but Verlander, you can't say what's going to happen with him. You never know what's going to happen with a pitcher arm. Next thing you know, he's out for the season with Tommy John surgery, the way things go. You see Roy Halladay has completely hit a wall now after being a workhorse for years and years and years. Who's to say that's not going to happen to Verlander 4 or 5 years into this contract? He's already 30 years old. Give me Buster Posey at 9 years, $167 million, 26 years old. Gets him completely through his prime. He's still going to be catching probably for the next 6 to 7 years of that contract. And then by then they can figure out what they're going to do with Brandon Belt. If there's another prospect, you never know. But give me the guy who has a National League MVP and 2 titles in his first 3 seasons handling a superb pitching staff with the San Francisco Giants, just barely over Verlander. I really love Verlander. I wish Angelo was here to defend Verlander and all that money right now. Plus to get his thoughts on the Jose Valverde re-signing. That'll be fun. Trey bullpen's a mess. Not the only extensions handed out, though, were to MVP winners. The Rangers' Elvis Andrews gets 8 years, $120 million with a vesting option for a 9th year, but he can opt out at the end of the 2018 or 2019 seasons. While over in the desert, first baseman Paul Goldschmidt, an all-star candidate potentially this season, gets a 5-year, $32 million extension with a club option for a 6th year at an additional $14.5 million. guys, which would you rather have, Elvis Andrews or Paul Goldschmidt, knowing that Andrews could opt out if he continues his growth basically at the same time at the end of Goldschmidt's the same time Goldschmidt's contract would end? We'll start it off with the Rangers fan in Brian.
I mean, is that even a question? It's got to be Elvis. I mean, luckily they signed him to this extension. I didn't think they would, given that Scott Boras is Elvis's agent. But because after 2014, when he would have been a free agent, Jeter's contract runs out. Hanley Ramirez's contract's going to run out. And what team's not going to want a 26-year-old shortstop who's arguably going to be the best at his position at that point? Rangers couldn't compete with either one of them financially. They just don't have the money. They don't have the backing that both those teams have. So this is a great team deal for the Rangers. And if he does decide to stay, they'll keep him all the way through the age of 34. So it would work out perfectly for them.
Yeah, but don't you think he's only going to stay if he's not doing well and won't get a better deal on the open market in 4 years when he's in his prime?
Well, he could do it. He could do what CeCe did, opt out and then re-sign with the Rangers for more money.
That's true, too.
So I don't see him leaving. When they announced it today in his news conference, he said he wanted to stay. Of course, every player's going to say that. But he's going to be – because he's the face of the team right now, and he will be for as long as he's a Ranger, as long as this contract extends out to be. So, and I think he likes that. He can handle the pressure. He wants to play here. Ranger fans love having him here. I don't see him going anywhere else.
Jeremy, over to you. Who would you rather have over the course of this contract, Elvis Andrews or Paul Goldschmidt?
This is a tough one. I've been thinking about it for a while. And I don't like that there's the opt-out, but like Brian said, I agree. I think that he's going to – I think they expect him to opt out after whatever it is, 5 or 6 years, and then re-sign. I think that is the ideal thing. Obviously, that could all change in 5 years, but I do think that's what was kind of expected when they drafted the contract. That being said, are they really getting – are the Rangers getting that much more production out of Andrews overall in the next 5 years than the Diamondbacks will be getting from Goldschmidt for a lot less money? I mean, I know that Andrews is a little more established and might have a higher ceiling, but, I mean, Goldschmidt is a very, very good athlete, and he's getting better every year. So I've seen him whoop the Dodgers' butts plenty of times, and unfortunately it looks like that will probably be happening for the next half decade as well. But I guess we have to see how it plays out. I think right now, just based on potential, talent, everything like that, I'm going to give a very, very slight edge to Andrews.
KP, over to you. What are your thoughts on Andrews' contract versus Goldschmidt's?
I looked at all the stats and everything, and I agree pretty much with everything Jeremy just said. I mean, Goldschmidt is, he's kind of unproven to a point. I mean, he's been in the league for a year and a half, and he got a $6 million a year, I mean, or so, contract for the next five, which is, I mean, awesome. I mean, he's certainly puts fear into my, I mean, he's whooped the Brewers too, as much as he's whooped the Dodgers. So it's kind of a two-edged sword. But Andrus brings a little speed. He brings a lot more hits. I mean, when you compare their hits over the seasons, Andrus packs a lot more hits and a lot more speed. He steals more bases. I mean, it all kind of depends how they end up playing out, but they're both different types of players. Goldschmidt, I think, packs more power. He's kind of more of the blue-collar Chipper Jones type of, like, working hard. He's going to get it done. And Andrus is the scrappy, I'm going to hit an infield single and bunt my way around. And it just, it's going to be good for both teams, but I think that I'd rather have Andrus.
Yeah, it's a tough call for me as well. I'm going to take Andrus as well, just because a longer track record. He's been up since he's 20. You know what you're going to get from him. 280, 290, lots of steals, good defense. Goldschmidt, it's still just 1 year. That's probably why Andrews' contract is worth more money, but I think it'll pay off in the end. Even if he does opt out, there'll still be options, and maybe they'll eventually figure out what to do with Jurickson and Profar. I did see a funny rumor from Ken Rosenthal that maybe the Cardinals and the Rangers should just meet up and trade Profar for Oscar Tavares, straight up. Which would be an interesting deal. Elvis Andrews, not the only Rangers talk coming from this week. We didn't think there would be that much from an opening series against the Houston Astros, but there was. Yu Darvish, a potential AL Cy Young candidate this season, goes 8 2/3 perfect against the Houston Astros with 14 strikeouts, but it's broken up with two outs in the ninth inning by Marwin Gonzalez. Exactly. Who? I had barely heard of him, too, when he hit a seeing eye single back up the middle with two outs to break it up. Not the only great pitching performance from the opening series. Clayton Kershaw for Jeremy's Dodgers goes complete game, four hitter with seven strikeouts against the rival San Francisco Giants. Plus, he hits his first career home run. So instead of starting it off with Brian and Jeremy, we're going to go to KP.
Oh.
Which pitching performance, pitcher's performance, is more impressive to you? Yu Darvish's 8 2/3 against a perfect baseball against the lowly Astros, or Clayton Kershaw dominating the World Series champion San Francisco Giants and hitting a home run as along the way?
Oh, man. That's a tough pick. I probably am going to have to go. Brian's probably going to hate me, but I think I got to go with Kershaw just because, I don't know, they're both different effects. Like, Kershaw made a fool out of the rival San Francisco Giants. I mean, just clowned all over them, hit a home run. Everyone's like having a good time at Dodger Stadium, going crazy. Like, this is awesome. Magic Johnson's pointing, you know, having a good time in the front row. But then Yu Darvish comes in and kind of probably shuts out one of the worst two teams in the league right now and shuts them down. Buddy struck out 14. It was pretty good, made it all the way, and then let the blooper up the middle. So in terms of sheer, like, impressiveness, I think Clayton Kershaw's was arguably more impressive just because, yes, World Series champs. I mean, that's a lineup you just don't carve your way through, and he did. And I think that it has to go to Kershaw.
Brian, we're going to give you the first opportunity. We know you're going to pick Yu Darvish. So, Brian, defend yourself and make sure you use a Yu pun in your response.
Well, you took my first line away. I was just going to go, well, Yu demand. But, no, I mean, Yu's was more dominant to me. Yeah, Kershaw hit a home run. That was awesome. Pitched a complete game. Only threw 90-something pitches. That's awesome. But he's also been in the league a long time. He's faced the Giants a lot. Yu's never faced Houston. Yeah, it's Houston. They're $25 million payroll, whatever. Who cares? 14 strikeouts. That's just dominant. I mean, there's nothing you can say about that. And, you know, last year during Matt Cain's perfect game, Angel Pagan made that insane catch running center field. You didn't need any plays like that because he was just that dominant. Yeah, there was that seeing eye single, and it was a hard hit ball, but it went right between his legs. All he had to do was drop his glove a couple more inches and a little more to the right, and he makes that play. Perfect game. But he didn't need any insane play like that to win the game, to get a perfect game. There was only one hard hit ball off him all day, and it was a Chris Carter fly ball to left center. You completely dominated him. He made them look like a minor league baseball team. He rolled over from the spring, rolled over from what he's done last year. In his last six games, he's 5-1 with like a 2.70-something ERA. He's been dominant for his last six games. And, again, I understand it's Houston. I know Clayton Kershaw hit a home run, pitched a complete game. But, I mean, that was one of the greatest pitching performances I've ever seen.
While we're talking about you, we loved them last year while we did the podcast. Let's do some more Yu Darvish puns. KP, what do you got for us? Yu Darvish puns before we go to Jeremy.
One I tweeted out was, I don't know about you, but I'm feeling 22. But I kind of changed it to, like, I'm feeling like 26 outs.
Oh. No, I want to go with some LL Cool J, but instead of Mama Said Knock You Out, I'm going to go with Marwin Said Knock You Out.
Ooh.
Ooh.
Those fight words.
Well, that is fine words. Hey, guys, that was only Marwin Gonzalez's 47th career hit.
Yeah.
Let's not give him the MVP yet. Let's not give him the MVP quite yet.
Marwin said, knock you out. Jeremy, over to you. First, give us a Yu Darvish pun, and then we know you're picking Clayton Kershaw, so then defend yourself.
Yeah. You know, that's not the pun. That's just the word you. But I'm going with Kershaw, of course. And not only because Darvish was pitching against the Houston Astros.
Yeah, I don't know if that one counts, man.
I had to give it a shot. But anyway, obviously everyone in the universe said, you got to be kidding me when that ball went through his legs. But Ranger fans really should be used to it by now, going one out from glory and then, you know, getting crushed back to earth. Thanks. Brian, are you crying over there? I'm sorry.
Are you crying?
There's a tear rolling down my eye right now. Thanks, man.
Apologies. All right, I'm fresh out of you puns here. Yeah, dominant pitching performance. I absolutely agree. But, you know, Kershaw struck out 7 Giants. Yu Darvish struck out 14 Astros. Pretty sure one Astros strikeout is like 1/3 of a normal one, because it basically is a AAA team. Not to take away from it or anything, but I'm going to give the edge to my boy Kershaw. Not as dominant of a pitching performance, but he was against a better team. And, I mean, you can make the case that Dodgers go down 1-2-3 after his homer. It's, you know, I mean, it was the difference in the game. He didn't need the extra three, but he provided the defense and the offense. One-man show on opening day. Gotta love it.
Speaking of Kershaw, we talked about Verlander's extension. Clayton Kershaw's probably due for one coming up soon. Gonna give this in a kind of two-part here, Jeremy. One, how much money in years, say it was 8 years like Verlander at 202 with the vesting option, how much would you give Kershaw? And B, how much money would the contract be before you said that's too much?
Oh man, that's a good second question there. I mean, personally, I don't have that much money. Now, I think he's going to get more. I don't think that's really obviously it's debatable, but I think that being that he's 24, 25 years old and has also won a Cy Young, narrowly missed on last year's, the favorite probably for this year's, you know, just completely dominant every season, I think he is going to get a little more than Verlander. Let's assume it's an 8-year contract. I think he goes closer to, you know, 205, 206 or something like that. A little bit more just kind of for that symbolic purpose of highest paid pitcher of all time. And where it would be too much, be too much for any player, but I would probably start to get really skeptical at like 220. And I'm a Dodger fan, so I can imagine fans of other teams would probably get skeptical around 210.
All right. So you're pretty much guaranteeing Kershaw will become the highest paid pitcher of all time at some point.
I don't think that's the question. Yeah, I think that's going to happen, and then if not this season, right after the season.
All right. Enough about pitching. Going to go over to the hitting. And two impressive guys, both huge sluggers, getting off to hot starts. Chris Davis of the Baltimore Orioles goes into Tropicana Field, 7-for-11, 3 home runs, 11 RBIs in 3 games. Michael Morse, the new Seattle Mariner, we talked about on the Over Under podcast how the Mariners have revamped that lineup, pretty much centerpiece around Michael Morse coming to Seattle this offseason. He starts off in the pitcher's park that is Oakland, 4 home runs, 6 RBIs, hitting .375 in 4 games. Both guys are on pace for 162 home runs this season. I don't think they're going to get there, but which has been more impressive to you to start, and which player would you rather have on your fantasy team for the rest of the season? Michael Morse or Chris Davis? We'll start it off with Brian.
Chris Davis versus the Rays, that's pretty good. I mean, you got Seattle versus Oakland.
I'm actually going to have to side with Chris Davis on this one. I think the Rays pitching is a little bit better, and he completely schooled them. Just completely, absolutely schooled every one of them. But who would I rather have on my fantasy team? Given that Michael Morse has to play, like you said, in pitcher's parks in Seattle, kind of moved the fences in, so we'll see how that plays. But you got Oakland. Anaheim's not an easy place to hit in. It's not a pitcher's park, but still not easy to hit. And then you got Arlington and Houston. Those two are more hitter's parks. But then I think Chris Davis, because he's got, I mean, granted, he's a former Ranger. I always like seeing him play here. But he's got it a little bit easier. I mean, he's going to be playing the Yankees. The Yankees aren't going to be all that great. We saw that last couple of days. But he's hitting in a little better parks for him to hit in. He's a lefty. He's going to be playing DH. He's not going to be playing the field very often. So legs are going to be more fresh. He's not going to be as tired. So I think he's going to be the guy that you'll want to have on your fantasy team.
KP, over to you. Who would you rather have on your fantasy team for the rest of the year, Chris Davis or Michael Morse?
I got to pick Chris Davis as well. But I think that's more based on the division he's playing than necessarily, I mean, him coming, because he's obviously young. He's only played so many years. I mean, Texas a little bit, and now he's in Baltimore. But having Mike Morse, he's a little more proven year to year. I mean, he had big years with the Nationals, so and I was at a game. I think he hit 2 grand slams against the Brewers. I mean, he's definitely packs a lot of power, but I think this season against the AL East, which isn't as good as it once was, I think you got to have Chris Davis, and I actually do have Chris Davis.
Ooh. Somewhere there's a guy that has Michael Morse and Chris Davis and is just sitting there grinning like an idiot, thinking he's so smart. Jeremy, over to you. Who has been more impressive so far, and who do you want for the rest of the year, Chris Davis or Michael Morse?
The first part of the question, I'm going to take Chris Davis. He's, you know, they're both absolutely smashing the ball right now. And they both faced pretty good pitching staffs in their first series. But, you know, he didn't just hit home runs. I believe 4 of Morse's 5 hits or something have all been home runs, and Davis, you know, has a few homers, but he's also hitting doubles and just has more hits overall. I think just boiling it down to the small sample size, Davis has been more impressive so far. As for a fantasy team, I'm really, really torn. Man, I love Michael Morse. I have him on one of my teams, but I know Chris Davis is going to have a pretty good year too. Just looking at their respective best years in the last couple, they're really close. It's like low 30s in homers, 85 to 90 RBIs, and you know the 270 to 300 batting average range. I think Davis is hitting in a better division to be a hitter in and a better lineup. That being said, I've been talking up Mike Morse all winter, all offseason since the Mariners signed him. I'm sticking to my guns. I'm going to take Mike Morse by a slight edge for fantasy.
It just figures that of all the fantasy stuff I've done and looking up everything, I have Chris Davis and Michael Morse on no teams. And I think it's because I got burned by Chris Davis. I was all in on him after that really huge half a season he had with Brian's Rangers. Remember that? And he came in the next season like the hyped fantasy sleeper, and I took him in the first round of a keeper league after 6 keepers, and he was absolutely terrible. So for that reason alone, I'm going to go with Michael Morse for the rest of the season. Just take the power. I like Chris Davis. I think he's going to be great, but I'm going to go with Morse. Just back to the theme from Over Under podcast, spite. Just pure spite. Not just Morse and Davis have been impressive. Guys, what has been your takeaway from the first week, or not even week, first series of games? What's been the most impressive team to you so far, or thing that you've taken away from this first series of games? We'll start it off with Jeremy.
That's tough. You know, my first instinct is to pick the one undefeated team in baseball, the Nationals, but then again, they're playing the Marlins. and I don't know how much can be said for that even this early. Geez, most impressive thing. You know, I have always loved pitching, and whether it be Yu Darvish, Clayton Kershaw, Madison Bumgarner, whoever it may be, there have been so many stellar performances already. I mean, 3-4 games in. Cliff Lee today, I know you watched that, Brian, but yeah, it's just been absolutely nuts. You know, I loved the year of the pitcher last year. I'm hoping it's similar this year. I'm looking forward to a lot more dominant performances because unlike, I think, a decent chunk of baseball fans who will enjoy, you know, blowouts and big home runs and stuff, I'm all about that perfectly placed curveball and whatnot. So give me the year of the pitchers number two.
For me, I'm going to double dip here, and I'm going to give some respect to the AL Central. I think it was very impressive. Cleveland going in to Toronto, who's the hyped team with all the guys they signed, and taking two out of three above the border. And how about the Minnesota Twins? Getting no respect. They had the second lowest over-under in the American League behind the Astros. And they take two out of three at home from the defending American League champion Detroit Tigers, who have problems of their own with the bullpen. But good for the Twins getting off on the right foot. The pitching's still not there, but that's not a bad team offensively, at least with Mauer, Murnau, and Willingham all healthy as it stands. KP, over to you. What's your most impressive thing that you're taking away from this first series of games?
I guess kind of, if no one's going to pick the Nationals, I'll at least mention them. I mean, going 3-0 and pretty much smacking the Marlins around. Granted, that's a AAA team as of now, but I think another one might be that the Atlanta, not experiment because they're good, but like the Upton brothers and that outfield is actually panning out. I mean, I think they've both hit home runs now, right?
BJ and wait,
yeah, and Justin. Both of them?
No, Justin has two.
Okay.
BJ's actually struck out for 6 consecutive at-bats.
Okay, so he's not working out. But they're still 2-1. I mean, they got good pitching, too. So, and the only other, this is more of a Brewers note to keep myself, you know, thinking positive. But it's good to know that the Brewers and we're not the only team struggling to find a closer and, like, bullpen issues. So it's kind of, I don't know whether that's impressive. No, it's not, but it's kind of uplifting to see, like, hey, by the way, it's hard to find a guy that can just come in and lock down a game.
Brian, over to you. What is the most impressive thing that you've taken away from this first series of games?
That the Dodgers can't hit. I mean, who's this Matt Kemp guy who's 0 for, what, 10, is it? No.
Get out of here.
Hey. Oh, you baited him. You baited him. It was perfect.
No. Actually, that is. I'm surprised they won the opener behind a stellar performance by Kershaw and then just got owned the next two games. I thought their offense would be better than that, given that they added. I know Carl Crawford's getting a little up there in age, Gonzalez getting up there in age, but I figured they would at least score some runs. I didn't think they'd get just destroyed like that. And the fact I didn't think the Yankees would be that bad, to be totally honest with you. They're the Yankees. They always seem to win no matter what happens to them. But I guess they finally hit a wall where they just have too many injuries to overcome, and then CeCe couldn't pitch the opener. Hiroki Kuroda bruises his finger and is out in the second inning. Those are my two surprises. I didn't think the Yankees would be that bad, and I didn't think the Dodgers would be that bad for 3 games.
All right, going to wrap it up with some injuries quickly. Ryan Ludwig, the biggest injury so far this season, a torn labrum sliding into third base. He gets surgery. He's out for 3 months. KP, NL Central, how big of a blow is that to the Cincinnati Reds division chances?
I don't know if it's a huge blow to their division chances. Long season, you got time. But it definitely hurts him in the time being. I mean, he's been a power hitter for them. He hits home runs when you need him and when you don't expect him. And that's definitely not helping.
Other injuries, Brian Roberts, Baltimore Orioles. He's my mom's favorite player because his name is Brian Roberts, and my name, first and middle name, is Brian Robert. So she finds that hilarious, and it's her favorite player just for that reason. But unfortunately for him, he is hurt once again, a pulled hamstring against the Rays today, on Thursday. He will get an MRI. Hopefully it'll not deter him again from trying to come back. Good news, Derek Jeter, he is apparently going to be due back on May 1st. That's what they're planning on for the return of the Yankees captain. And, of course, it's just not 3U, 3D if we don't have this week in Tommy John and somebody avoiding it. Somebody actually saw Dr. James Andrews in Birmingham, Alabama, and did not have to get Tommy John surgery. It's absolutely fantastic. That pitcher is, unfortunately, though, one of my Braves, reliever extraordinaire Johnny Venters. He gets a plasma-rich platelet injection. Try and say that five times fast. But he will be out at least 4 weeks before resuming a throwing program. So he will be out possibly until the All-Star break to see how it goes, but avoiding Tommy John surgery for now. The last segment on 3U3D today, a little bit of a weekend watch. What's the one thing you're looking forward to seeing this weekend? We'll start it off with Brian.
Well, I got to go with the teams I got picked to win first and second the AL West. Rangers and Angels coming home for the Rangers home opener tomorrow. But Sunday night's game is going to be awesome. It's going to peg to be Yu Darvish versus Jared Weaver. That's my game to watch. It's Sunday night baseball. It's the national televised game, so I highly suggest everybody should watch that.
KP, over to you. What is your one thing that you're looking forward to this weekend in Major League Baseball?
Well, it's tomorrow, and I'm going to be there watching Kyle Loesch suit up in a Brewers uniform to see if he can, fingers crossed, go 16-3 again.
All right. I'm personally looking forward to the Braves-Cubs series because it's my favorite team and my brother's favorite team, so it's a nice little Mapes brother battle this weekend. But unbiased opinion, I'm really looking forward to Nationals-Reds, the NLCS that never was last year, especially Sunday's matchup, Steven Strasburg, who, when we were talking about pitching performances, if he hadn't been pulled after 80 pitches, he could have been on that Yu Darvish, Clayton Kershaw list of a dominant performance. But on Sunday, Nationals Reds, Strasburg versus Johnny Cueto. I'll make sure I have that fired up on the MLB.tv at 1:10 Eastern. Jeremy, what's the one thing you're looking forward to this weekend besides Matt Kemp trying to get his first hit?
Well, yeah, hopefully we won't have to wait too much longer for that. But, yeah, I'm going to kind of continue the current theme. We're all early season. We're in love with our own teams here, as we should be. But KP, one of your former Brewers, Zach Greinke, making his first start tomorrow against the Pirates in L.A. I know he had a little trouble in the spring, and this has been a, you know, much ballyhooed contract in the first place, and everyone's saying, oh, how bad he's going to be or how great he's going to be. It doesn't seem to be much middle ground. It's either great or terrible. And I'm just interested to see what foot he starts out on. Not that the Pirates offense is a gigantic test, but, you know, anything positive will be kind of settling for Dodger fans after the 1-2 start. But, yeah, away from my team, Mapes, you took it right out of my mouth. Nationals-Reds is going to be a fantastic series, regardless of who's pitching. Those are arguably the two best teams in the National League, so I'm looking forward to watching those games as well.
Sounds awesome. That's going to do it for 3U3D. This time around, make sure you check out the blog 3U3D.mlblogs.com. Lots of stuff happening over there. We have Brian's blog on Yu Darvish's near-perfect game about being one out away. My blog, inspired by the whole Bob Costas ludicrous, not fiasco, but Bob Costas quoting Ludacris talking about Bob Costas in lyrics, which is fantastic, inspired me to write my top five hip-hop baseball references. And if there was ever a person to write about the top five hip-hop baseball references, it's a white boy from Connecticut. So make sure you check that out on the blog 3u3d.mlblogs.com. And, of course, we've been talking about it all episode, Jeremy's blog on why Matt Kemp is not done. We don't really think Matt Kemp is done, but while we have the opportunity to tease him about it and the San Francisco Giants as World Series champions, we have to pile on as much as possible because he's Jeremy and he's better than us anyway.
He's going 50-50, 50 Ks looking, 50 Ks swinging.
Oh, burn. One last burn
50
there.
50 what?
One last burn there. Make sure you check us out on Twitter. It's at 3U3D. Like us on Facebook, 3up, 3down, all words, no numbers over there. If you want to email us, 3u3dbaseball@gmail.com. Suggestions, comments, questions, anything you'd like to talk about. And that's going to do it for us. For Kurt Peter, Jeremy Dorn, Brian Boynton, I am merely Brian Mapes. I'm sorry we ran out of time. We'll get to Eddie Mata the next time.